Okay.
Welcome back. Joining us now is the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm trying to make it through my sign-up for Obamacare. So far, it's been pretty easy. So I've got to participate in our socialistic government, I suppose.
Okay, well, let's talk about, I didn't know they called them earthquake swarms, but what was it, a little over a week ago, Chile, was it 300 earthquakes in a week? That is a swarm, isn't it?
Well, it was, and there was a couple. There was one that started out at 6.7, which is a pretty good shake. I mean, that can do major damage. And there was a 6.0 sometime within the week, but most of those clustered very small earthquakes, maybe 15 or 20 that were greater than 4.5 on the Richter scale. They're offshore in Iquique, and that's in the northern Atacama, and I've actually been there and worked around there. But it's interesting in the fact this is part of a seismically inactive region, so it's kind of woken up all of a sudden.
Well, what would cause, I mean, 300 of them in a week, has it settled down or are they still getting them?
To my knowledge, I was unable to find anything past that swarm within the week, and it started on the 16th of March and went through the 23rd. I didn't see any news after that, but earthquake swarms are not that unusual. If a big one's coming, sometimes you'll get these earthquake swarms before, especially if they're associated with volcanic activity, which this one isn't. But what's interesting about this, I mean, this goes back to, it's along the Ring of Fire. It's the subduction zone. The Nazca Plate is underriding the South American plate being subducted, oceanic crust being subducted underneath continental crust. These are very shallow earthquakes. They're offshore. They're 20 kilometers, so they're basically right at the edge of the subducted plate. It is at an abrupt northwest bend in the South American coast in the subduction zone. So historically, there was a giant earthquake here in 1877 that was an 8.5, but it's been seismically inactive ever since. So maybe it's woken up again, and that earthquake in 1877 caused a tsunami that killed 2,000 people in Fiji with up to 24-meter high waves in Chile. Now, this is back in the day. This was essentially a non-inhabitable part of Chile because it's in the Atacama Desert, the driest part of the world. So, didn't kill very many people in Chile, but it did kill 2,000 in Fiji. So what we think's happening, this what's called a seismic gap, an inactive region, is starting to be active again.
Now, when you get that many earthquakes, is it a precursor to a monster earthquake?
Well, it could be, but it could be just small releases. You know, a lot of these aseismic zones are areas where the faults creep. They don't get locked up and move catastrophically. And an example would be the San Andreas Fault around Hollister, California, where it creeps all the time. And they haven't had any big earthquakes there for a very long time, and they likely will not, because the tension, the strain in the Earth's crust is continually released, so you get little earthquakes all the time. So that may be what's happening here.
Mickey, is it common to see these kind of earthquake clusters?
Yeah, they're not unusual. Earthquake swarms are not unusual at all. I think this one made news basically because it is a zone that's been inactive for 137 years, and it's in a part of the world where earthquakes can be huge. I mean, the world's largest earthquake ever recorded was near Valdivia, and that would be down in southern Chile. Closest large city would probably be Concepcion, and that was a 9.5 in 1960. So that would be, I mean, that is just off scale. The next largest one was the Alaska earthquake in 1964 at 9.2. So it is in a part of the world where the largest earthquakes can occur, and so that's kind of woken up the scientists.
Now, you were also on top of that mudslide. Where did this mudslide take place?
It took place in northwest Washington, about 60 miles north of Seattle, in Snohomish County. It's hard to say, near a couple of towns called Oso and Darrington. And just to let you, for people to realize how news flow gets twisted around. At one point, when I first started doing research on this, which was the day it happened, there were a lot of people missing and a lot of people feared killed. As of Friday, we had reports of 25 killed and 90 missing. Well, by yesterday, we were down to 18 people killed and only 30 missing. So the news is that comes out of these disasters is often just completely out of kilter. But what happened there, let me give you some background. This was covered by ice in the latest ice age, and as the ice retreated, it was left with glacial till on top of bedrock. Now, glacial till is mostly clay. It's ground up rock, okay, from the ice moving over the bedrock. So it was mostly clay with some sand and gravel mixed in, and you had this hillside, and you had 40 centimeters of rain in March, which is over 15 inches of rain, and the whole hillside slid into the river. So the dimensions of this thing is pretty huge, 2.5 square kilometers. That'd be a mile square. Slid off the hill. It's up to 12 meters deep, which would be 40 meters deep in places. And it just wiped out everything in its path, including 30 houses on the banks of the local river, which is even harder to pronounce. It's still a Guamish River. And so when you have this till on bedrock, it's like somebody trying to walk on a downhill on black ice or something. You know, it just is so slippery, and it gets water saturated, and it had a catastrophic release. And it goes to show you shouldn't build a house on the banks of a river. And that's what these people did. They wanted to live in the woods on the banks of a river, and they got caught. And I mean, it's just reduced everything to toothpicks and rubble. And interestingly enough, in 2006 there was a slide in this exact area. So people should have known it was coming.
Well, you know, when I go out to the Pacific area, not just the Pacific Northwest, but all up and down the coast of California, and they have those, I call them, you know, they're dirt mountains. I mean, so it never surprises me that they get mudslides.
Well, no, you know, it's just a recipe for disaster. Very steep terrain, lots of rainfall. I mean, average rainfall in March is eight inches a month. Where I live in Albuquerque, south Albuquerque, New Mexico, we get 10 inches of rain a year. So, and so they got double the rainfall in an area that was just primed to slide off, and it slid off. So, yeah, lots of really steep terrain out there, forested rainforest, cold rainforest. It doesn't freeze that much, but you do get the action of the frost, the freeze thaw, which lubricates also. So it's a terrible tragedy. It's a natural disaster, but you know, we talked a couple of months ago about geological catastrophes waiting to happen, and this was one waiting to happen.
Mickey, here where I live, you know, we've got the largest piece of exposed granite in the world, Stone Mountain, mm-hmm. as we call it.
Sure.
Yep. And from, you know, having Stone Mountain in view all the time, you look at it. For those of you not familiar with metropolitan Atlanta, I mean, we have a mountain that's solid granite. And it, I've been told, goes underneath almost the entire eastern seaboard. So,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, this is probably a good time to take a break. We're speaking with Mickey Folt. Mickey is the mercenary geologist. Mickey and I will be back to continue this conversation in a couple of minutes.
Do you want to play rough? Okay. No. Say hello to my little friend.
Welcome back. Joining us is Mickey Folt. Mickey is the mercenary geologist at mercenarygeologist.com. Mickey, what's your Twitter handle?
At Mercenary Geo.
At Mercenary Geo. We were talking about the earthquake swarm, over 300 of them in a week down in Chile. The mudslide out there in the Pacific Northwest west in Sonomish. I can pronounce it because I had a cousin that lived out there for a number of years.
Okay.
And then we ventured into this big rock that we see here in Atlanta, Stone Mountain. Now, that is that fairly, from a geological standpoint, is there that much exposed granite like we're used to seeing it with Stone Mountain?
Oh, there's a lot more granite exposed. I mean, this idea it's the largest piece of granite in the world is just so much fluff. That's crazy. It's not particularly a big hunk of granite. I mean, I'm looking right now out my office window at the Sandia Mountains, and we have more granite exposed in the Sandias than Stone Mountain. I'll guarantee you that. So it's not an unusual thing. It's part of the Piedmont region. It intruded the metamorphic rocks of the Piedmont, which are part of the Appalachian Mountains. This continental collision that happened about 300 million years ago or so. So, but what makes it unusual, I guess, is you live in an area where there's not a lot of outcrop. It's relatively flat, but you have this very resistive granite that's an erosional remnant, and all the metamorphic rocks that surround it are less resistive to erosion, so they've eroded away, and it's called a monadnock, is the geologic term, and that's basically an erosional remnant of that's exposed with rocks all around it. So that's really what it amounts to.
What forms granite?
It's just magma. It's kind of you know, we all know about magmas and volcanoes, and granites are kind of the last part of the magma series, the stuff that's left over once all the basalts, the darker rocks, are extruded and intruded. Then you have granites, and the surface equivalent of a granite would be called a rhyolite, and that's what forms these big disastrous volcanoes that blow up explosively all the time and create these big ash flows that kill lots of people.
Is Stone Mountain itself, now I know where you're living, you're saying you've got more exposed granite for just but one big rock. I mean, that you can see for 50 miles if you've got a good vantage point. I mean, it's a big, big chunk of exposed granite. It's not.
Yeah,
that...
it's big, but it's not that unusual. What makes it unusual is there's nothing. Now, I've never been there, but it's flat all around it, I would suppose. And, you know, it's not that high. I'm looking on the internet, it's 250 meters above the surrounding area. Well, that's 825 feet. The Sandias I'm looking at up here, they've got, let me do the 5,000 feet almost of granite exposed there, 4,500 feet anyway, vertical. So it's not really that unusual. I mean, I think it's unusual because it's in a wet part of the world with not a lot of relief, and it sticks out like a sore thumb, if you will.
You know, on
it's
a
only
clear...
5 miles in circumference at its base. That's not very big.
And on a clear day from the top of Stone Mountain, you can look up and see the Appalachians.
Yeah. Okay.
So Stone Mountain sits in an area that, relative to what you find just a few miles north, is relatively flat. I mean, it's around the base. I mean, there's some hills, but, you know, I guess that's almost like as we come up from central Georgia, even though that's the metropolitan Atlanta area, you know, 10 miles further up, you start getting into the foothills of of the Appalachians, so... And the Smokies.
If you want to see really big exposures of granite, go to Yosemite. I mean, you could put 1,000 stone mountains in Yosemite. So, and that's all granite in Yosemite.
Well, so the notion when we were growing up, we were saying that Stone Mountain, that whatever caused that granite, was all you could trace it all the way up to, up to New Jersey. That's all just a bunch of fluff.
Yeah, it's pretty much a bunch of fluff.
All right. Well, you learned something. You learned
something. Sorry to burst your balloon.
No, you're not bursting my balloon. We've got the carving of Robert E. Lee and all those guys on the face of Stone Mountain.
Yeah. Well, it's not as big as Mount Rushmore, though, which is granite. And we've got four presidents carved into that one. So. Now, you know, I realize that it's a landmark in the Atlanta and northern Georgia area, and it's someplace I've always wanted to visit because it is fairly famous as a geological locale. But in terms of it, it's not unusual geology, and it's not of unusual size, but it is quite an interesting place.
One of my employees back when I was still on the gutter guard business, his grandfather, or may have been his great grandfather, actually owned Stone Mountain, and he traded it for a shotgun, a wagon, and a mule. And the family has a letter that he had written describing why he sold it. It was in the middle of his property. He couldn't farm it. He had to go around it, and he thought he'd gotten the deal of the century.
Well, that was before it became a tourist attraction. They put Robert E. Lee on it, right? And who else? There's a couple other guys on it. Stonewall Jackson, maybe. I don't know who else. You'd have to tell me.
Yeah, I'd have to pull it up. It was a nice carving. They never got it finished. So it's.
I didn't realize.
Oh
that.
No, they.
Anyway,
they...
it's on my list. It's on my bucket list of places to go when I go to Atlanta. When I come down to see you sometime and watch my Cardinals beat the Atlanta Braves or something, we ought to go up Stone Mountain.
All right. Now, how did you become a St. Louis baseball fan but a Denver football fan?
Well, I grew up in Missouri, so I became a Denver Bronco fan when the St. Louis Cardinals moved to Phoenix. So I didn't have to be a fan of that sorry-ass team again, and I got to pick a good team out in the West where I've lived most of my life.
Now, do you like the Missouri Tigers for college, or did you ever develop an affinity for college football?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big Mizzou football fan.
Were you glad that they joined the SEC?
Absolutely. We're playing big boy football now, and we did quite well last year.
So. Now, yeah, you did. You wore out my Tennessee Volunteers, I'll tell you that.
Well, your Tennessee Volunteers did pretty well in the NCAAs for an 11 seed.
Yeah, we did, and we should have been playing on Sunday. That was a terrible call Friday night.
Well, all I know is, man, there were some really good basketball games over the last 4 days. It was none of my teams made it very far, but it was sure fun to watch those games.
Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, and Stonewall Jackson. That's who's carved on the face of Stone Mountain.
Well, there you go. The heroes of the Confederacy there.
Okay, well, we've been speaking with Mickey Folt. Mickey is the mercenary geologist. The website is mercenarygeologist.com. And that Twitter handle one more time, Mickey?
At Mercenary Geo, joined over 35,000 Twitter followers. We have a lot of fun with Twitter.
We were going to discuss, I had thrown out suggestions, discussing that San Andreas, and Mickey said, no, that's a show by itself. So we will save that one for the next time.
Absolutely. We can spend a full show on California earthquakes.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Mickey. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alan.
All right. Have a good day.